Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast that straight up, no joke this week, appreciates and treasures the Ben Bishop era in Dallas. And certainly a, though long time coming, sad thing to see him finally call it quits this week. We're going to do a little bit of stargazing. Got a three-man booth, three-person booth tonight. Taylor and Mark joining me. But again, I did want to go ahead and kick off. I know we normally bring the funny, but I did wanted to start. We'll start there. It's been a big news in Dallas Stars goaltending. It's been unfortunately bleak since the last time we spoke, and the prediction that Mark made that just about broke me has turned out to be pretty much correct, sadly. And then, you know, we're having some fun, having some cancellations and some news to talk about around the league in regards to the virus. And so we've got a whiz bang show, real optimistic stuff, but I promise we'll manage to find a little bit of fun along the way. So Taylor, Mark, hello, good evening. How are both of you?
Hey. Doing just great.
Well, good. Wonderful.
I'm just here. Sorry. It's been a week, y'all. I don't know. It's been a month. It's been a year. Realistically, I saw a date on something at work and it said 2022. And I was like, oh, that's like 2 years from now. And it still hasn't clicked with me that we're almost through 2021.
I think we could officially rename the podcast Stargazing : It's Been a Week, Y'all, and it wouldn't be something we have to change.
It's true.
It's good.
Dallas is never quiet. Like, they have to be one of the most dramatic teams, and I mean that in the sense of, seems like every week there's something new to talk about and some crazy thing has happened, and
yeah,
whether it's on ice, off ice, it's been...
It's classic. Yeah. If you just look at this team's like average emotional load, right? It's a perfectly average emotional team, but it's average because it's either a 10 or a 1, and they're never like a 3.5 or a 4, right? It's either everything is on fire, or I guess in our case, everything is frozen entirely, or they're in the Stanley Cup final, and there's just no middle ground, and it's a little exhausting, frankly.
Oh, you're just hit. I already used manic depressive in the preview for tomorrow. So you're just following right along on that.
Good. Great.
The great thing here is that they're more fun off the ice than they are on the ice. And so we'll stick with that.
I don't know that fun is the word I'd use lately. I mean, so we'll start with some off the ice stuff, of course, this week. Two really big pieces of news coming down. The first is that Ben Bishop's comeback is over officially. There was a rehab start. It was interesting to me. There was a rehab start in Texas that did not go well. And then all of a sudden he's calling it quits. And then you get all of the reports about how he's had trouble moving laterally in practices. And, you know, it was one of those situations where part of me was like, if some of that had broken over the summer, then... You know, part of me was like, they're just really, you know, selling the drama, Mark, to your point. And it seems like the culprit was the knee that he hurt, of course, right before the original COVID shutdown, never quite came back. And he is officially done as an NHL player. And I think he's going to do the LTIR retirement thing. So he's not formally retired yet, but definitely not coming back. And then the other bit of news is Anton Khudobin has been waived and assigned to Texas. So it is officially the Ottinger-Holtby era in the Dallas crease. And we'll start with, what is your kind of favorite or defining Ben Bishop moment?
I'm going to get to that in a second, but I'm going to say this one thing about what you just said about had some of this broke over the summer.
Yep.
I think two things happened. One, I think that the organization respects Ben Bishop so much that they wanted to give him the license and the opportunity to do everything he could to get back. He even said in his kind of semi-retirement press conference that if he was a forward, he would still be skating. Like,
yep.
It's a matter of the position that he's playing and what that position requires that cut his time short.
And also probably the fact that he's, what, 6'7", 200 plus. I mean, there is a lot to move up and down, side to side, when you're an athlete of his caliber at his size.
Exactly. But I think they wanted to give him the ability to explore and ensure and do everything that he could to make sure that this was, you know, the right call and that it was time. And, you know, like he didn't have any regrets of maybe I should have tried it or given it one more shot or whatever. And then him try that later down the line or what have you. So I take a little bit of exception to that because I think that's what the organization was trying to do. And then the other thing is I feel like, didn't they kind of signal that that's what was probably the likely outcome anyway when they signed Holtby in the offseason?
Like, I mean, they did. And you're right twice, because I will say that as a, you know, it is impossible to look at his body of work as a Dallas Star. And I love the way that you framed it, and I'm glad you did. If there's any, you know, Ben Bishop is on the short list of players that absolutely earned that kind of deference from the team with what he did while he was here and what he accomplished. And you know, if that in fact was the reasoning, which it sounds very likely that it was, right? I totally believe anything, you know, you're connected and all of that. So if that's the rationale, I think that's a wonderful one. And I think it's a, you know, that is a big feather in the cap of the Dallas Stars organization that they would do that for a player of Ben Bishop's stature, and also a cap in his, you know, a feather in his cap for being somebody that has earned that sort of, you know, engagement, that sort of support from the team.
Yeah. And this comes, you know, yes, I am, you know, around the organization a lot, you know, in my role as NHL.com correspondent this year, and, you know, being amazing, kind of big news.
Drop it.
Like, I do it all. Boom. But no, it's like, yes, I am around. But for me, this is not something that I know or that I, you know, talk to somebody, you know, high up. It's just knowing how Jim Nill treats people. So you can say what you want about his roster construction, managing the cap, drafting, development, all of that other stuff. But the one thing that you absolutely cannot pin on Jim Nill is the fact that he's an asshole, because he is the opposite. He is so well respected in the NHL realm. He's able to attract players here because of the way in which he treats them, and it's as a person first.
I mean, I was going to say, like, just if you want, you know, a view into who he is and how he's perceived, look at Dallas's record pursuing free agents, right? Even going back to, you know, we're back to talking about, I guess Bishop wasn't a free agent, but they signed him once they acquired him. But yeah, he's consistently been able to get the guys he wanted to agree to come play here. So.
Exactly. But so back to the original question, sorry, I'll go off the box.
How dare you?
How dare I? So this is an actual, this is a behind the scenes moment that I'll share with everybody. So in my real job, I have the opportunity to meet a lot of people in sports. We consult on sports facilities, et cetera. And I was working on a project, and I got the opportunity to meet the president of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I spoke with him at length about a different project, and at the end, you know, he'd asked me kind of like who I was and where I was from. And I mentioned I lived in Dallas and I was big hockey fan. And then he put me on the spot and he was like, you know, so what do you think our weaknesses are? And I'm like, you're the Tampa Bay Lightning. You have none. and he kind of laughed. And then he was like, hey, you know, make sure that the next time you see Ben Bishop, you tell him I said hello. And I was like, sure, because, you know, I just walk up to Ben Bishop and I'm just like, hey, buddy, what's up? No, I do not. But it was at practice, or no, it was after a game that Ben Bishop started. And usually the starting goaltender is often requested to speak on the game, especially if it's one in which, you know, they post a shutout or it was a one goal game or it was a goaltending duel, whatever. And so Ben Bishop was going to speak with us, but he was sitting down and taking his pads off and stuff. And I was just like, hey, by the way, I've met, you know, such and such name, Tampa Bay Lightning. And he was like, I mean, face just lit up. And he was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, you know, why did you see him? And when did you do that? And it's so cool that, like, he sent me a hello. And I was like, well, why wouldn't he? And to me, that just showed, like, how well respected he is by all of his other teammates. And then also just, you know, to like, for it to click and be like, yes, I know this person. And like, that's so cool. And I think sometimes it's so easy to to move on fast, like, oh, I don't want to think about the old team I used to be with and the fact that they, you know, they won cups after he left. You know, he was just like, he had mad respect for that team still. And it went both ways. And so for me, that's my kind of favorite Ben Bishop moment, even though nobody else saw it except for me.
I love it. I love it. Mark, how about you?
Oh, I don't know that I could follow up Taylor that well.
That's why I'm making you,
I would,
not me.
I know. I mean, I look at it from my ironic stars viewpoint, which is that fabulous Vezina quality season that Bishop gave to the Stars right after the point where they really needed a Vezina quality goaltender.
Oh, he deserved to win it that year.
He did deserve to win it that year. But how many times over the last decade have we said if the Stars only had a above average goaltender, this team would be there? And then in comes Bishop and the team isn't ready for him.
Yeah. Give him to that the Lindy Ruff years, and where do you get? Like it's always that Patrick Sharp version of the team when they still had, you know, several functional lines. Mine's the same. I can't help but go with the obvious, which is that, you know, that game seven against St. Louis, where as much as the perception of that game is if only the wraparound had gone in, or if only they'd not hit the post, the reality is that game was Ben Bishop deciding that he was just not, you know, to steal future words from his partner in the tandem, right? He didn't want to go home yet. He was having a good time hanging out in the net. And that, if you ever want to see just the impact a goaltender can have on an individual NHL game, that game is, he was magnificent that night. Yep. And he was magnificent in, you know, it does not get to be a much higher pressure situation than that. And he was just phenomenal, like, you know, skin tinglingly good. And I still remember, you know, my first thought after they lost, he was so good. My first thought wasn't, you know, angered that the Stars had lost. My first thought after that, and I got to anger, don't worry, but my first thought was sympathy for to play as well as he played and to do what he did and to not win was honestly tragic in a way, right? It was yep. one of those great like doomed moments.
Yep. And I guess to follow on what Taylor was saying about Jim Neal, I think, you know, as many conversations as we had over the last 6 months about what in the world the Dallas Stars were doing with their netminders, in retrospect, I think we kind of have to look back at what Jim Neal pulled off there. And I don't know that he could have done much better.
Yeah, I think the only quibble you can make, and this is one of those where the reality of the league strikes, and I don't know that it would have been possible. You know, you look at the term and you look at the dollars they gave to Anton Khudobin, and I think that, you know, that is the only nit I can pick. And even doing that, one, given how well he played before he got that contract, I think you're kind of hands are, there would have been riots.
You could not let the guy who backstopped you to the Stanley Cup final game six walk.
That's right. I mean, yep. I agree.
Like,
and also,
Dallas,
and that's why
Stars fans would have rioted.
Yep.
Absolutely rioted. Like, and I mean, you could have any argument you would have made. His age, his term, he's never had any stretch of hockey like that before in his life. It would never be recreatable, whatever, would have fallen on deaf ears.
Yep. And listen, I was not bringing that up because I agree with the line of thinking. I was, the reality of his situation was he was always going to get that. And then the second thing is that argument is also driven a little bit by hindsight, because at that moment, like, Bishop didn't come back and Braden Holtby wasn't on the roster. So at the moment they gave Khudobin that contract, they desperately needed Anton Khudobin. And the fact it's one of those classic, you know, you have to judge the process, right? And the process was sound. They had Khudobin. He fit the system. He played well. They needed to keep him. All of those things line up. And then the last bit I'll say is, you mentioned, you know, one of the other things you have to give Jim Neal credit for is the way that he managed the cap. Yeah, it's now today, right now, it looks like a little bit of a gross deal and you wish the Stars, you know, didn't necessarily have it on the books, but it hasn't cost him anything. Right. Name a player that they've been unable to resign because of Anton Khudobin's number. And two, even in the worst case, it's one more year. Right. It's not going to cost him they're not going to not be able to re-sign Jason Robertson because of the Anton Hudobin deal. So as much as there are aspects of it standing here today that don't necessarily look awesome, none of those things existed when the deal was signed. The deal had certainly been earned by performance, and it's really not going to hurt the team anyway. So it's one of those, like, yeah, you can get mad at it, but you know, you're yelling at clouds.
Right, and the thing is, I don't know that you were going to be able to sign Hudobin, who was really the known quantity at that point, without going term.
Yep.
And so, you know,
and he had the cachet around the league, right? Somebody was going to give him.
Somebody was going to give him. Yeah. They would have backed up a dump truck in like Montreal or somewhere to make him a really well-paid tandem goaltender. If he could recreate the magic he had in the bubble. Like, I don't think that's an unfair.
Well, and Ottinger wasn't the semi-known quantity that he is now either. A lot of our hindsight includes the last season with Ottinger, in essence, being tandem with Hudobin and outplaying him. And we didn't know that at the time. You know, we could hope, but hope doesn't get you anywhere.
And so, yeah, and now it's Ottinger and Holtby. I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about, you know, Jake Ottinger. And I think as well, there's Holtby in himself has played extremely well. And I think he also, the reality is with the structure that this team has, you know, the risk is as long as Ottinger doesn't turn into a pumpkin, you're probably going to be able to find a guy that can play competently in that, you know, number two or that 1B slot behind this team, the way it's built. This is not if Dallas gets okay goaltending, they can elevate it. And if Ottinger is doing better than okay in the number one slot, then guess what? It's probably going to be fine.
Right. And the thing is with Hudobin and clearing waivers, he's going to get his time down in Cedar Park. And if he plays well in Cedar Park, somebody's going to pick up that contract with all of the different, you know, very marginal goaltenders that are having to play. Having somebody like Hudobin, who has at least shown some success in the past, if he can get that success going by playing games, which is what he's going to get playing with the Texas Stars, that contract is not necessarily just stuck. We may be able to pull off a trade.
Yeah,
and I mean, don't underestimate.
Ekman Larson got traded this year. Any contract is movable.
Yep.
Yeah, but I was also gonna say, like, don't underestimate the what's the word I'm looking for? Desperation.
The desire.
Don't underestimate the desperation of teams that are getting hit so hard right now with guys being out with COVID.
Yep.
I mean, some organizations are rolling like their fourth guy out in goal. Somebody's going to be desperate enough.
There's a shot from the Colorado game where they've got the e-bug and he's wearing Nashville Predator leg pads. It's just one of the most absurd. They've got it's 11 forwards. They had five defensemen until, and this is a, we'll segue into that, Taylor, but it's one of those, like, by God, that's Jack Johnson's music. Anytime you're a team that is eagerly hoping they can get Jack Johnson back in the middle of a game, you know, things are gruesome. So I think you're right. You can't underestimate with stoppages and with everything going on, like, if he can come down and show any kind of form with Texas, then there's going to be a team that will make an offer for one more, you know, a season and a bit of Anton Hudobin at 3.5 or 3.3, whatever he's paying.
Yeah.
Well, especially if they can get Dallas to hang on to a little bit of that. I mean,
yeah,
I think there is a market for him. I think at the time, maybe there wasn't, but, you know, the cap is a situation that is constantly evolving throughout the year. And, you know, maybe later down the line after you've accrued some, you know, some unused cap space and his daily cap space decreases as time moves on, you know, maybe there's a better trade partner down the road.
Yeah, you pick him up for pennies at the trade deadline because you're only having to pay, what, a month and some change of his salary, and then you deal with the headache in the offseason. Because, of course, the cap hits, like you said, the cap hits his remaining charge for the year, no cap in the playoffs, and then you have the entire summer to reset your roster. And if he plays great, awesome. If he doesn't, you can probably buy him out. You can throw him with a sweetener, as we joked earlier at Ekman-Larsson, right? You can trade anybody in this league if you put the right assets around it. So I agree with you completely. It's not, he's by no means a sunk cost. And frankly, you know, Dallas was supposed to be all set with Bishop and Hudobin, and then things happened and all of a sudden they're calling up Ottinger. And it's not insane to think that we may, you know, we have not yet seen the last of Dobby. He goes down, gets some consistent playing time for the Texas Stars. Something happens and hey, you know, teams need potentially three goaltenders, not on the NHL roster, mind you, but who knows?
Or even an injury within the Stars organization. I mean, having a third goaltender available is certainly something that Jim Neal has shown a desire to have.
Well, and the reality is behind Ottinger, like, tell me who's NHL ready. If you had to call up somebody and play them today, right? There's
nobody.
The system kind of, yeah, like, that's kind of it.
Yep.
Dallas would be the one in the goaltender market at that point. So, yeah.
Probably looking for a guy that looks a lot like Anton Hudobin.
Exactly. So, yep. You know, in some ways, maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Maybe not for Anton Hudobin himself, but for the organization that he didn't get claimed. Because even though it would probably complicate their cap situation and some gymnastics might have to be done, I think just knowing that you have that option in house has got to be a little bit more comforting, especially as we see COVID just running rampant through rosters right now.
And let's talk a little bit. Let's go ahead and make that segue. So as we mentioned, right, Dallas thus far, no one in the protocol, but I think Calgary is at 18. Colorado is playing with Colorado has a lineup tonight that if you play in a rec league, you're like, all right, 11 skaters, let's go. Who else wants to go home? Like this, it's been bad. It's getting worse.
Did you see what Nashville had to do? I think it was Nashville, Carolina. It was Carolina. Carolina was able to recall two players on emergency basis under some obscure rule that requires the player that's being called up to be under 850K annual average value. They don't count against the cap because they were going to be four players short of a full roster today.
And it's amazing. And then of course in Montreal, they've it's what, 50% capacity, or no, they're playing without a crowd.
No, Montreal is without crowd.
Yeah.
The Leafs are back to 50%.
You've got just teams everywhere shutting down players. And it's not, you know, I use Calgary as the example just because I have the figures on the top of my mind and it's indicative of what's going on. So over a 48-hour period, Calgary went from zero tests positive to 18 and climbing. And so it's just one of those moments where not only is it, it's not just one or two popping up, it's entire chunks. And then some of them, you know, we teased them earlier, the Jack Johnson thing was an inconclusive test and they were waiting because if he got two negatives, that would override the inconclusive. And he did, so he's playing. So it's not like 100% of these, because of the nature of the test the NHL are using, it's not that 100% every single player that we're talking about is, you know, conclusively symptomatically positive, but they're in the protocol, which means they're not available. And you have teams icing rosters that are multiple players short of where they're supposed to be under normal circumstances.
Yeah. And you start to wonder, like, if the NHL, I think, went from having, you know, a guy here, a guy there, to all of a sudden, I mean, I think that there was something like 24, 25 put on the COVID protocols just on Tuesday alone. And that list has definitely grown over Wednesday and Thursday. And you have to start to wonder, like, is this a situation where the league is going to have to consider just shutting it down? Just 2 weeks, everybody go to your respective corners and stay where you are and don't talk to each other, essentially.
Well, and not only that, but you have to consider as well, like, the way that this particular strain's curve seems to be working is if you shut it down for 2 weeks, like that might be enough to have it work its way through these rosters. And, you know, if you say, okay, we'll see everybody after Christmas, then there's a not impossible chance that it kind of tears its way through the locker rooms and you're back to being able to have normal-ish rosters on the other side. It's like it's starting to get to the point where there's some sense in doing it.
Well, I mean, the concern there is if you shut it down, then it's not going to tear through the locker room because you're not going to have a locker room. But I think you're right. And here I guess the argument
is it's already in there, right? The argument to shutting it down is they've already got it.
Someplace.
I'm just trying to keep other teams from getting it, honestly. I mean, do you want to be sitting there going, hey, we're about to play Nashville and half of their team or more is on the COVID protocol. But sure, let the rest of the guys who've been around them come into our building and play.
If you're Evgeny Kuznetsov on his third go-round, you probably don't care.
I mean, it's
got the first COVID hat trick.
Well, I'll go with Taylor's line. In my day job, I deal with a lot of hospitals, and they aren't particularly worried about the new variant. What they're worried about is that there's going to be this humongous tidal wave, and even if this, as it seems to be, turns out to be highly transmissible, but not all that deadly, just the sheer numbers are going to be as overwhelming as if it was much more deadly.
I mean, get into border issues. Part of why Calgary ended up shutting down when they did is they were about to get on a plane and fly to, gosh, I'm blanking on where, Chicago. They were going to head to Chicago. And if they'd done that and then had what happened, they all would have been stuck. You know, there is a reality in the NHL where players are transferring across a border that is not necessarily, you can't assume that it's going to stay open.
Yep. Although I think that COVID's kind of established itself in both places, and given how infectious this one is, I don't know that there's a way that the tidal wave just isn't going to happen at this point. I mean, I've seen sewer studies for Palm Springs out here that just kind of, you know, they have zero detected cases, but it's in the sewers. So, you know, it's just everywhere, whether you're seeing the cases or not. And it's gonna blow through as it will.
Yep.
But I guess my point is like, yeah, we may not be able to stop the tidal wave in general. Like, the NHL is not that powerful. But they might be able to stop the wave amongst the team transmission. Like, let it run through whatever locker rooms have it. But like, if you're sitting there as Dallas is, I feel like almost at this point the only one that haven't been there yet.
They all got it last year, so
maybe yeah, they got theirs all out. I don't know, but like if you're living here in your Dallas, you're like, please
for
don't,
2 weeks
please
around
don't come here.
Christmas. Yeah, but shut down for 2 weeks around Christmas. The Olympics are going to be a humongous question mark. But I suppose if you have players,
I think the league has played that. The league has played the Olympics so brilliantly by just punting it and dropping the steaming turd right into the players' laps by saying, hey, we don't want to do it. It's going to be awful if you go. China's going to keep you there for 5 weeks if you get in trouble. But, hey, it's your decision. It's like me with my daughter when she doesn't want to eat dinner and just wants to, okay, you can have that cupcake, but then you don't get any TV and you can't do this and you can't do that. You can make that choice, though.
Right. But then, again, you have somebody like John Klingberg who comes out and says, you know, this is – you know, I haven't been to an Olympics. Yes, this is kind of my last shot at doing it. I really want to do it. Maybe for him, it makes sense.
I mean, the thing is, the Avs voted to play tonight. And obviously, this is developing. And so it's very possible that we could have, you know, I think it was with Buffalo or somebody last season, and the voting to play turned out to be a little bit of a misleading situation. But the word out right now is, you know, 11 forwards, 5 defensemen and a goalie. And the team was given the option to not play and elected to go for it anyway. So I think you're exactly right, Mark. There are absolutely players that are going to say, yeah, I could get stuck in China for 5 weeks, but hey, guess what? I've, you know, I think it's Steven Stamkos. I haven't heard him say anything, but he's never played for an Olympic team. You've got to think that there's some motivation to do so. We heard Klingberg's comments. Like, there are guys that, you know, if you're Joe Pavelski, right, you've had two of the most impressive seasons in an impressive career. And, you know, you may not, he certainly may not have another run in him. And there's got to be at least some aspect of him that says, gosh, if I don't do this now, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And then, or like even the young guys, I think, you know, it deprives them of the opportunity to go and, I don't want to say build their brand because that isn't really the way hockey players think, but, you know, to kind of get a little bit more recognition and a little bit more notoriety and, you know, and say what you want. And maybe Canada and USA don't look at it in quite the same way as maybe European teams, but I think that there is an allure and like a pride that comes for playing for your country that cannot be replicated in any other setting. And the fact that it only comes around every 4 minutes, the fact that, or 4 minutes, if only, but it only comes around every 4 years and the hockey player's prime career is not really that long.
Oh, I mean, most of these guys get one shot to go at their prime. Most, yeah. You know, like, sure, it's possible that they won't, that they'll have another go, but, you know, look at, like I said, Steven Stamkos. He's been an elite player in the NHL for his, but yeah, he keeps getting hurt, right? So, like, you look at a guy, and I'm knocking on every wooden surface I can find, Stars fans have no fear, but, you know, you'd look at a guy like Jason Robertson and say, hey, he's only ever had success at the NHL level. He's, you know, he's got all the makings of a player. He's, everything says that he's going to get more chances, but, like, what if he doesn't? You know, when will he ever have the opportunity to go do this with a you know, likely alongside a guy like Joe Pavelski, who he already has a level of comfort with? There's a higher chance that he'll, you know, find a roster fit. All of these reasons, right? Do you necessarily, you know, if you're in his position, do you want to bank on the fact that I'll get another go at this in 4 years? It'll be fine.
But you know, And
while you're making this decision, you're in your early 20s and you already feel invincible. So,
yeah, I think a lot of teams, it's, you know, a lot of countries, it's going to come down to what the players that know each other in those countries decide they want to do. Yeah. You know, they're going to pick up the phone. They're going to talk to each other. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see some countries where we're kind of the top tier players opt out. And there will be other countries where all the top tier players kind of opt in. And I wonder if there's going to be a weird little hybrid there.
Like, I wonder if you're John Klingberg and you're already leaning towards going, and then all of a sudden you start to hear about a bunch of high profile Canadian opt outs. Do you think, like, if you're, you know, Leon Draisaitl, for example, right? If you start to see some of the big names on the traditional powers decide they're not going, then you're thinking, hey, you know, Montreal and Dallas are the last two beaten finalists for the Stanley Cup. Maybe this is my, you know, opportunity to go and not just, you know, check the box and play for my country. But if ever there was a year where one of the top teams might be vulnerable, right, it's this one.
Yeah.
Noted Canadian Leon Draisaitl, who is actually German.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. If you're a German, if you play for Germany,
not gonna do anything in the tournament. No offense.
They have a better chance playing against gutted rosters. That's the point that I'm making. Like,
if he has to look forward
to is getting curb stomped by Canada, then maybe he makes one decision. But if he has a chance.
I thought you were saying Klingberg. If Klingberg sees Leon Draisaitl dropping off, they're going, that's not it.
No, flip that. If you have players that even Swedish players, like if you have players at countries that aren't Canada, and really that's what I'm pointing at. If you have players that aren't Canadian, seeing a bunch of, you know, if a less than 100% Canadian roster shows up, that is going to put a lot of pressure on players from teams in that second tier. Right. Teams that would normally just expect to lose to Canada and are maybe thinking, you know, hey, if everything breaks right, we could get into the other semifinal. Right. And have a chance at it. All of a sudden you're thinking like, hey, you know, I might, you know, there's one less team in this turn. You know, there's an opening. There's a hole. There's a chance.
Right. But on the other hand, if Klingberg goes out there and says, yeah, I'm really interested in going. And then if he hears all of the big names for Sweden are coming out and saying, well, I'm probably not going to go. You know, is he going to go play with a bunch of European guys who he hasn't seen since he was in juniors?
Yes.
Or is he going to say, you know, at that point, maybe I stick around in the U.S.? It'll be an individual decision at that point.
Yeah, I think that he still does go because, like he even said himself, it's his last chance. And yep. I think that the fact that, you know, he'll be playing with SEL players, I mean, that's still a really, really good league. It's not like he's going to be playing with some scrubs out there. So, yeah, I think he goes. I don't think that changes his mind necessarily.
But I think each player is going to end up making an individual decision. And that's probably something that's going to be done behind the scenes and kind of on a country by country basis.
So I don't know. I think it will be, but I guess my thing is what I've never quite understood is why does the NHL feel like they have to shut down anyway? I mean, a lot of European soccer leagues will let players go and play for their country and World Cup qualifiers and whatever. And the Premier League and the Champions League just continues on and plods right along and calls up the next man. So I like, could they invent something to not count those players against the cap while they're doing their Olympic duties? And
They could, but I mean, those tend to be more one-offers. Our home away series, and so you may be missing a game or two. There's a little bit of training involved. Now here, if you're potentially talking about a 5-week quarantine, that's an entirely different story.
Maybe this Olympics isn't the best example, but I guess like I think under normal circumstances, doesn't the like hockey side of the tournament last like maybe 10 days at most?
Yeah.
And like a lot of players will only be there for like 3 or 4. And then they're like, okay, peace, because my team got bounced. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't understand why this has never been
considered. Kind of the opposite of how players deal with the world championships, where players, when their team gets eliminated from the playoffs, all of a sudden you get reinforcements.
Exactly. So speaking of reinforcements, I think Dallas has got to be wondering if there's any on the horizon, considering they've now lost 4 straight.
Yeah, Jekyll and Hyde. And, you know, how different would this game, this season be if Tyler Seguin buries that shot into the open net in Vegas to, go up 5-2?
Yes.
And then Vegas comes back and kind of gets a cheap little one and makes it 4-3, and all of a sudden it's a game. And has the team looked, you know, team didn't look that bad at the beginning of that Vegas game, and all of a sudden it's like the confidence went away, and that fine line went to the other side, and now they can't pull it together at all.
You know, I know that Rick Bowness like essentially said after they lost at home on Tuesday night, because I don't know what day it is either, but on Tuesday night he said that the illness that has been going through the locker room is behind them and there are no more excuses. And then here you get to Thursday and all of a sudden Miro Heiskanen out with a non-COVID illness and will not travel with the team to St. Louis, and like all of a sudden you're sitting there going, well, that sucks. And you had Rube Hintz and you had Alexander Radulov miss a game after he says, you know, hey, this is no more excuses. We're over the hump. This is out of the locker room. And we don't know exactly what's going through the locker room. And teams go through this every year. And it's always around this time because, you know, weather changes and people are more indoors and cold flu season starts. So it's not something that's unique or different. But I do wonder if it's the energy out of the guys, right? Like
maybe.
Like, maybe you're still able to play, but are you playing at 100%? Probably not. And it sounded like half the team had it at one point. So, like, that could explain why they kind of looked like they were dead for some parts of that four-game losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, you know. But then again, you take a look at a team like St. Louis, and St. Louis may not have, you know, a bug going through their room. But on the other hand, if you take a look at their injured reserve and guys who are just flat out for, you know, even if it's just day to day, you're talking about at least it's more than one hand's worth. And they seem to be able to go out there and still keep their identity and play the game regardless of who's up. And that's something that Dallas doesn't seem to be able to do.
I mean, I guess technically Dallas kept their identity. They went back to the identity, though, where they stopped scoring.
Right, but they're still scoring.
It's an identity, though.
Yeah, it's, you know, but, you know, are they creating chances? You know, I take a look at some of this stuff. You know, what was the game before before St. Louis? I'm drawing a mind blank, but there were pucks all over the place, rebounds being given up, and sticks going at pucks, and we just couldn't catch a break and catch an open look or get a lucky bounce. And it's almost like that's the way we were before we went on the winning streak. There's this big kind of luck factor, and it's all or nothing. And when we're scoring goals, it goes. when we aren't scoring goals, you have to earn every single one. But when you are, everything goes in regardless. And Dallas, more than other teams that I see, that happens in bunches as opposed to just individually.
Yeah, it's like the whole team goes through slumps at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And here especially it's hurt because all of a sudden, you know, we think we have this great line with Robertson, Hintz, and Pavelski. And so that's carrying us a little bit, but we're also getting depth scoring at the same time. And now we aren't really getting either. And you know, whether there's sickness involved, you know, Hintz not being 100%. Other teams are making adjustments to our top line, and we aren't getting any contributions down the lineup either.
But that's the thing, is I know that over that 7 games streak, obviously that line was absolutely on fire, but they were starting to get contributions from down the lineup during that stretch. I mean, it wasn't all those guys. It wasn't like they were going out scoring 4 goals a game. It felt like that, but it wasn't actually like that. Yeah. So I don't know.
But we were averaging 4 goals. We were averaging 4 exactly. goals and giving up 1-2. And that's the other side of that streak that we're forgetting about, is that was not only we were putting the puck in the net, but we were keeping it out of our net as well. That's the point where we went from 28th on the PK up to top 10. And so things were clicking on the defensive end as well.
And that's why I wonder if the energy side of this, of that sickness going through the locker room, really impacted more than we think it did. Because in order to play that type of game where you are constantly forechecking, where you're constantly trying to drive offense and you're trying to keep guys out of your own zone, that takes a lot of energy and effort. And it shows when they can't keep up with their own game plan. Yeah. And I think it showed at the beginning of the season, and then they had that players only meeting. They were like, guys, suck it up. This is how we have to play. And then they went on an absolute tear. And it's like you said, they weren't giving up goals. And realistically, I mean, they lost one of those games like 2-1, and then they held St. Louis to 1 goal up until like midway through the third period, and one of those was an empty net, and like, so it's kind of hard to really say that the defense completely collapsed.
Yeah, I mean, and you don't want to be a Chicken Little here and just say the sky is falling because you're getting a few increments up in the L column. But it certainly feels that way, and it kind of feeds into the narrative with this team that our community certainly has it, that's just kind of sitting there waiting for the other shoe to fall, and you're almost more likely to believe the bad news than you are to believe the good news.
Yeah, well, if you tell me not to look at the elephant, then I'm going to look at the elephant.
Yeah.
So yep. I feel like people are going to see what they want to see. If you want the team to succeed, you're going to look at it and say, okay, yes, they put up some losses, but they're still creating chances. And, you know, guys are just, you know, maybe they've actually run into some good teams. Like, don't forget that there's a whole other team full of professional hockey players on the other side that are also meant to win games. So, you know, sometimes you're just going to lose and like, you know.
Right, but then, you know, it's so Stars-ish, though, because back in November, what we were doing, we were looking at that stretch of games at the second half of November and saying, oh, the Stars can't play at all, and now they're going to actually have to play some real hockey teams. And what did they do? They stepped up. They beat all the good hockey teams. And, oh, they made it through that stretch of beating good hockey teams, and now they're going back and playing the same old way. So what do we have here?
I think that's the million-dollar question. But according to Rick Bonus, they know how to fix it, and they're going to fix it.
Well, they already fixed it, but then they forgot how to fix it is the problem.
I don't know if it's that or, you know, like, I think it's kind of like anything. If I'm really good and, you know, really good at work and feeling confident about myself, and then you kind of get a little bit lax because you're like, oh, I'm doing so well. And then your boss is like, hey, this sucked. And then you're like, oh, hey. And then you get scared and timid and you kind of forget what made you good. It's a big thing. And it's elusive, and it's hard to get, and it's hard to keep. So I think that, you know, I think it's going to work itself out. And maybe I'm just more jaded. Maybe I've been through too many seasons, and I don't ride the waves of a season like a normal fan does anymore. But I think it's going to be okay. I do, too.
And you know, if nothing else, I think one of the things that comes with a veteran presence is the ability to face the ups and downs, even in extremity, and not overreact to it. And the Stars are certainly in a position with their leadership group to do exactly that.
Yes, as much as it frustrates fans that the players don't seem to react in the same way, like, it's not that they don't care, it's just that it's an 82-game season. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, you grind it out, and sometimes the luck is with you, and sometimes it isn't. I have a good friend of mine who always says, you know, when you're playing a match, what's going to happen? You know, 25% of the time you're going to win no matter what. 25% of the time you're going to lose no matter what. But that middle 50% is the stuff that you can impact, and so that's where you need to make your impact. And I think this team is able to get through that kind of logic.
Well, we'll find out one way or the other. Yep. With that, we're gonna wrap this show up. I think we've gone on long enough. We hit on a lot of topics today. Mark, thank you so much for joining me and chatting, and Wes as well. Definitely, guys, you know, give us a like, give us a follow, rate us on iTunes or wherever you find your podcast. Tell your friends. We're cool, we promise. We like to have some fun sometimes. And hopefully we'll see you guys on the next episode of Stargazing.